Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket after the third day at the Keir Oval. And, well, the Alistair Cook story does go on.
It just keeps on going, doesn't it? And it's a bit like Cook's batting his first test in Nagpur. He batted for 403 balls in Nagpur in 2006. He's already chalked up 315 balls in this innings. Surely he's not going to get 100 in his final test innings. It was dicey early on. He was playing and missing. I mean, it was another real struggle for the batsmen out there in England's second innings. They had to work really hard. Cook survived to the close. What, 46 not out to go with his 71 in the first innings. So over 100 runs in the match already.
Having not made a 50 in the series as well.
That's right.
So, and yeah, it's been an excellent contribution from him. I think, on the other hand, that watching the way he's played in both innings and watching the way the bowlers have bowled as well, it's a reminder, actually, of why he is giving up. And one of the reasons is just that it is tough at the moment opening the batting, especially as a left-hander. These bowlers are so good at that round-the-wicket attack. And, Cook has not fathomed it. And he played a lot of fresh-air shots at Mohammed Shami today, round-the-wicket deliveries, which actually didn't do a whole lot. But the alignment, the way he played them, trying to drive the ball, which just wasn't quite in the path for the drive. And, this sounds a bit sort of technical, but the best way to play that kind of angle from round the wicket is to try and hit back to mid-on, because that, in a way, is almost playing it from where it's roughly from, allowing for the angle slightly, almost playing with the spin, in a way, I suppose, but it's not spin, it's the angle. And he's playing almost against the movement. He's trying to hit against it. So he's trying to hit towards the offside of a ball angling in towards leg stump. And that doesn't work. Well, like the wicket today, in fact, of Moeen Ali, trying to hit against the line of movement, Jadeja bowled him through the gate. And, you know, we all know that if you face a left-arm spinner, to a left-handed batsman, face a left-arm spinner, he's spinning it into you, you try and hit it with the spin on the leg side. That's the easier shot to play. But for some reason, left-handed batsmen facing seam bowlers from round, they'll try and hit it through the offside against the angle that the ball's coming at. So that's why so many of them get into trouble. It sounds simple to correct, but clearly it's not.
So that brings us on. We'll talk about Cook a bit more in a minute, but it brings us on to Keaton Jennings, who has averaged 18 in this series.
And 22 overall his test career.
I saw a tweet from you earlier which said, how can they take him to Sri Lanka? Mm. I think they will, though.
Do you?
Well, just if you listen to Ed Smith, who's a national selector, who's talking on Test Match Special at lunchtime, his point was it's been such a difficult, well, you just made the point as well, it's been such a difficult summer for opening batsmen that you can't really judge them. You know, it's a false judgment to make.
But I think you can judge them on how they play and how they get out. And he gets out in so many rather elementary ways. I mean, today, funnily enough, you know, you're watching from the sidelines, you see a bloke leave the ball and he gets bowled off stump, and you think, well, what the hell's he doing? That's terrible judgment. In actual fact, it was a good bit of bowling, because Shami, round the wicket, was angling it away towards the slips, and he was trying to leave the ball, beaten a few times, and then he sees another one which looks a little bit wide, and you think, OK, well, that's missing, I'll leave it, and it swings back in and trims the off bail. Lovely bit of bowling, but so many times, Jennings, even early in this innings today, I was watching quite carefully, actually, because I thought, you know, could this be his last test innings? He doesn't move at all. He's such a static, sort of inert presence at the crease. He doesn't have any movement. He sort of shuffles sideways when the ball is on off stump and it sort of hits the bat. He doesn't make any kind of proactive movement to the ball. He almost lets it hit him.
He does, yeah.
And it's just, maybe he's watched AB de Villiers' video too much about batting in the box and the soft block. But the thing about the soft block, which is AB de Villiers' method of playing under your nose, allowing the ball to come to you, just stunning it into the ground, it has a sort of deliberate essence to it. There is a deliberate, you know, movement of the bat and of the feet balanced over the top of the ball. You are stunning the ball. You're not letting it hit the bat. And that's the difference. And Jennings, I feel, is just someone who's standing there waiting for the ball to glide off and catch the edge. And too many times he's been out the same way. Mm. Today, you know, people talk about his ability against spin, that might be something that holds him in good stead against the Sri Lankans. But he didn't look that good against spin either. He got out to Jadeja in the first innings, playing a rather lazy, sort of naive shot, caught at leg slip. And then today, went for a sweep, was a little bit lucky to get the reprieve from the umpire, not given. You know, I'm just not. I just don't find him convincing.
Yeah. Well, just listening to Ed, though, I mean, I think there were two things. One was the fact that, you know, it has been a really tough summer for opening batsmen, and so in a way that feeling that goes in Jennings' favour because of that. That, you know, Cook, who's come out here at the Oval today and done well. I mean, he's had a really tough time of it this summer. In fact, all opening batsmen have had a tough time of it. But also the fact they don't want to blood two openers at the start of a new series. Cook obviously going, so that, you know, if they drop Jennings, there would be two slots. And also, the other question is if not Jennings, then who? I know that's not a great, in a way, that's not a great reason for selecting a player, but, you know, who?
Yeah, well, that is a problem.
I mean, you could, I mean, here's something. I mean, you could say, well, James Vince to open with Rory Burns, left-hand, right-hand combination. I mean, that's a bit of a punt as well. James Vince, he is among the group of players that have been selected this summer by England. And Ed was talking about, you know, having that pool of 17, 18 players that you choose from, and there will be one or two that come in from the outside. But having that sort of bedrock group, and I suppose Vince must be in it because he was picked for the Southampton Test match. You know, he was included in the squad. So that's a possibility. Obviously, it comes with risk because you look at James Vince's career and he's nicked off a lot. He hasn't had a very good time of it. And one thing, when you watch Vince, you feel, and we've talked about this before, you feel there's a classy player in there. He's had a good summer as well. He has got lots of runs
recently.
Yeah. So, you know, but so if not Vince, then who? You know, if not Burns, then
who? Nick Gubbins. I'd pick him. I really like his attitude. He's an intelligent boy. He's adaptable. I know he's playing in the second division, but, you know, I don't care about that anymore. I mean, it's a struggle for an opening batsman, whoever they're batting against or in now anyway. So this summer seems to have been just a really taxing season for batsmen generally. I think he's got a good game. He's played in the Lions a fair bit. He's got 50 against the Indian A team for the Lions this summer. I just think he's got a very rounded sort of game, and he's a proactive sort of player. I think he's one of those people. You want people to learn, don't you? And it's a thing that Ed mentioned on radio today, Ed Smith, but also something actually that my friend Manoj Badali, who runs the Rajasthan Royals, said about Jos Buttler. Very, very quick learner. Mm. Very, very inquiring mind. Picks up on things, manages to impart them into his game, quickly develops. You can see him evolving almost in front of your eyes, Buttler. And I think Gubbins is a bit like that, or has the potential to be.
So, for you then, Gubbins and Burns in the first Test match? Two left-handers making their Test match debuts.
I'd love to have a right-hander, but, you know, who is there? I don't know. Someone like Daniel Bell Drummond was touted a while back, but he hasn't had a good season. Obviously, Hazeeb Hameed is averaging 9 at the moment.
He's
not even
Lancashire,
in the Lancashire team. So it really is a very scarce selection.
There's Joe Denley, of course.
Joe Denley's batting number 4.
Yeah, well, he used to
Used to be an opener.
Yeah.
Quite like him. I've never thought he was actually the brightest as a player. You want people who've kind of... It doesn't have to be intellectually intelligent, but just smart about the game. And there were times I felt with him in the past that he made dumb decisions when he played, but maybe he's improved.
Hmm. Let's focus on this Test match then. We said yesterday it feels like 4-1, unless there was a significant India fight back. Well, there was a fight back
there
of sorts, and Jadeja, he's an excellent combative cricketer.
Yeah.
And in a way, he's not got in the India side so far, not because he's not a good cricketer, but because it was a question of, you know, where do they put him? Ashwin, obviously, the main spinner, and they wanted to be Seamer dominant in their attack. Where does Jadeja fit in? I suppose he could have played at Lords instead of Yadav,
or he could have played it instead of Hardik Pandya. Pandya actually did well at Trent Bridge and obviously took 5 wickets, but I think they've been a bit obsessed with Pandya, and they had Jadeja in their side, who is just a very talented cricketer who always makes a contribution.
Well, excellent all-round cricketer. Bats, bowls, fields.
Yeah. Jadeja played superbly today. I thought England got one thing wrong. They shouldn't have taken the second new ball because Shami had just played the most appalling... There was the worst bit of India today as well as the best bit. Shami, who had the excellent Jadeja at the other end, just slog one up in the air with a ball or two to go of Rashid's over. And actually, Stuart Broad was slow getting into position. I don't know if you noticed this, but he was running from long on to long on with left-hander, right-hander, and he was actually slow getting to his long on position for Shami. And if he hadn't been slow, he wouldn't have got to that.
Well, he was in the wrong place.
He was actually too straight. Yeah. He should have been wider, but because he was straight, the ball ended up close to him and he took a good catch. But that was a terrible bit of cricket by Shami. But then England decided to put the seamers on, and I remember Jimmy Anderson bowled one ball, a sort of slower cutter, and it sort of spun away from Jadeja with the old ball, and he immediately said the spinners should be bowling. And Root said no, I want the new ball, and they got another 40 runs.
Yeah.
And Jadeja batted brilliantly. But so England got that wrong. They should have kept the spinners on with the older ball, because I think Bumrah would have struggled more, and Jadeja probably as well. They could have set more sort of appropriate field as a result.
Yeah, well, 32 for the last wicket, to be absolutely precise. But again, it was that feeling of bowlers bowling without trying to get one batsman out again, and the pressure was released. And in a way, it worked out okay-ish in the end, because England are in a decent position at the end of the day's play. They got a lead of 40. They would love a few more. But I just wonder in the future whether captains will just think again about that tactic. We talked about it before. It's happened so often this summer where runs have come towards the end because captains have just set the field back, and batsmen who are in have been able to exploit it. And also as well, the other thing, Bumrah really, you mentioned Shami, Bumrah really supported Jadeja. He fought for Jadeja until Jadeja ran him out.
Yeah.
That was a ridiculous... I mean, it's a bit like the run that Sam Curran took, the second run Sam Curran took at Southampton. And there's always that prospect of a run out towards the end of an innings when you're looking to get a player on strike. But I thought actually Jadeja could have trusted Bumrah. I mean, he was sort of surviving after a fashion, but he showed a great deal of grit and determination. But England now... I mean, it's been a sort of slow-motion test match. It's taken them a long time to get into this position. India fought hard. They sort of held onto their coattails. But a lead of 154, 8 wickets left, 2 days to go.
80-20 England. Shall I give it the old Southampton guess again?
Well, going into the last day at Southampton, you said India had a 15% chance of winning. Yeah. I think you then reduced it to 10%.
Yeah.
It's hard to see India winning here. England, that's a big
Unless
lead.
Unless there's a collapse.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a big lead with 2 days to go and 8 wickets in hand, and England have their strength lower down. So they, in a way, they've got over a hurdle today by actually making some
top order runs. Eureka.
Yeah. I mean, they're not a massive amount of top order runs. No one's made a half century yet, but in a way, they've done the hard part for them. And when you think of the likes of Bairstow and Stokes and Butler and Curran to come, there's plenty of power there. And of course, the focus tomorrow initially will be on Alistair Cook. I mean, it was a remarkable reception that he got. It was a bit like when you go to the theatre, and
I can't afford the theatre.
Well, you I suppose not. You're also not very cultured, are you? Anyway, but anyway, you go to the.
My father is an actor, and my sister is a history presenter. But still, I don't know what they do really.
Probably more culture than me. But if you go to the theatre, and it's a great play, and the actors come back on. And then, everyone stands up and cheers, and the curtain comes down, and they're still cheering, and the curtain comes up again, and they come back on again. It was a bit like that.
An encore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it just went on and on and on. And Cook, I mean, they actually had to wait for everyone to stop cheering, sit down. It was a remarkable
and
moment.
And typical of him, of course, although he played and missed quite a lot, he's very good at just sort of getting that emotion, getting rid of it and not being affected. I mean, whether he was affected, I don't know, but it didn't look as if he was. No. He just applied himself. I sat with his wife for a bit watching the game, and she was just as detached as Alistair. Yeah. She said, well, what will be, will be. Yeah. And he's been amazing, but he doesn't bring his work home with him, and she's looking forward to going to Devon with him on their family holidays when they go away, which he's never able to do normally, except for one night. Childhood sweethearts, well, sort of teenage sweethearts. Yeah. It's really lovely, actually. Yeah. It's a lovely story, the Cook and Mrs. Cook, Alice Cook.
Well, I mean, for the romantics then, Simon, it would be amazing if he was able to, in a way, replicate...
Well, even a 50.
Well, I'm thinking replicating the first test, where he made a half century and a century.
That's
He's already made the half century here in the first thing, making 71. Still got a long way to go. It might not be enough time left in the match, actually, for him to get 100, the way things are going.
God, it was a battle, wasn't it?
It was.
I mean, you know, there was some scratchiness. I thought one thing that the Indians missed a trick with, and it was probably, maybe there was just a touch of sentimentality about this, but they never bounced him. In fact, they've never bounced him at all in the whole, I don't think, the whole series. And last summer, twice he got out hooking. Mm. Remember to Chris Morris, for instance, at Trent Bridge? And he's always said to me, actually, one of the balls he hates the most is a ball sort of under his armpit, a sort of leg stump or just outside, because he's got a blind spot. And he's got out a couple of times like that. Nobody's tried him out with that this year. They set a field back today for deep square leg, and Bumrah especially was getting some good zippy pace, but nobody dug one in to make him hook, as if it was to say, well, I want to be dignified about this, and I don't want to kind of bowl a ball at your head in case I hit you on your last test. I'm sure it wasn't that, but it sort of felt like that somehow. Yeah.
And lots of quite relieved people, I think, towards the end of the day's play that Cook survived, or at least Cook himself. He'd come back tomorrow and try to make three figures in his final testings. I think the media, the written press as well, desperate enough to do rewrites of Cook being out towards the end of the day's play, and also the authorities here at the Oval, who there might be a Cook effect in terms of the crowd on the fourth day, because this game's starting on a Friday, which is not perfect for the Oval. They love to have Thursday and then the two big days of the weekend, and they might get a decent Monday, everyone back at school. Holidays are over. Some people suggesting, this has all been over-egged, Alistair Cook, all this talk of Cook's last game, the sort of sentimentality involved, and it was actually quite tense commentating when he was on Norton. He didn't want him to get out for Norton in his last game. I know Don Bradman did, so he could say, well, he's got something in common with Bradman. But, people saying, got a bit sentimental. But, this man, he's played the most consecutive games in the history of Test cricket. He's like something like 3,500 runs more than the next highest run scorer on the England list. That's Graham Gooch.
Opening batting.
He's done it for 12 years.
The only one who scored
years.
10,000 runs as an opening batsman.
He had an incredible series in Australia when England won the Ashes. He's won in India. He's not a glamorous cricketer. He's not the most exciting cricketer to watch.
I wrote down this stat today, actually, that he scored 2,345 runs off his hip, clipping off his hip. Gosh, so you'd think it was probably more, but that's about 25%. Yeah. So I wonder how many he's squirted behind square on the offside, probably even more.
So, but the point is, I think, he's not the most glamorous of cricket, but he has been a magnificent player for England. It shouldn't be undersold. And actually, the fact the crowd responded like that just shows you what 25,000 people thought today, or 24,000 England supporters thought today about Alistair Cook. It's easy to sort of snipe and say, it's a sort of benefit game for him because he shouldn't be in the side. And, there is the case for arguing that. But also, I think it is worth celebrating what he's achieved.
Which didn't think he should play. Well, and actually, he's been not only, was it his last match to give him a send-off, but he's actually contributed very effectively.
What I said was I thought there was a case for him not playing in the game. Once he'd announced his retirement, then you move on. That's the sort of the unsentimental view. On the other hand, it does add greater lustre to the game, I think, as well. And also, in this case, it is worth celebrating a player like Alistair Cook and the career that he's had, and the fact that he's produced this game as well shows he's still got it. I mean, there's still people saying, when England are struggling, next win. It's a bit like King Arthur, isn't it? When Britain's struggling, King Arthur will come back and all this sort of stuff. It's a bit like England struggling next summer. Bring back Alistair Cook for the fourth test of the Ashes series if he's, on 2,000 runs for Essex. But, I mean, he's quite a stubborn bloke, isn't he? I'm sure that won't happen. Well, who knows? But, I mean, he's only 33. He's still able to produce. So he might not be the most glamorous cricketer ever, the most spectacular cricketer ever, but he has...
he's the most effective England batsman ever.
Exactly. He has contributed so much to the England team.
I don't think he's a great batsman, but I think he's a great run maker.
Yeah.
And he's proved it again today. He's been incredibly effective. He's been England's rock. And we'll probably see England to victory in this test match. I reckon England probably need another 150-odd. set India 260, 270 to win. And I just, they're going to get more, but I think at least 270 will be enough.
So 270 in the last innings is just not achievable.
I don't think, not with this India team.
No. Okay, so well, it still looks 4-1 to England after 3 days. It looked 4-1 to England after 2 days, despite India fighting hard on this third day. England still well ahead in this test match. We'll see what transpires tomorrow, and we'll talk to you this time tomorrow evening. Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.